My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sima Famalant. She is the curator of Between Two Points, a show on now at the lobby at the Ellen Browning Building, 2871 Southeast Division Street. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Sima.
Thank you, Joseph. It's great to be here.
You put this show together for the owner of the collection. So you're the curator, and your goal is make this lobby a public art gallery, free. It's open 10 to 2. And the people who live in the building come through the lobby and they enjoy the art. And then the public is allowed to walk in, check it out, you know, completely welcoming. And it's always, it's a very modern collection. So it's very 21st century. And you call this one Between Two Points. So what's the basic concept?
The basic concept is that it's all the artwork in the show has a line in it. And it's this idea about what can a line do and how do artists use that as a tool in their toolbox, basically. And it comes out in very different ways, as you can see in the show. It comes out sometimes as context, sometimes it's abstraction. And I just like that. In my client's collection, there are so many artists that obviously use this tool, and it was fun to kind of put ideas together and see how they bounced off each other.
I mean, all art has lines. So how did you pick out art that used line in an interesting way?
That was the big question, actually, because you're right. All things have lines. I guess I was interested in how artists used it differently or how they used it in a way that was very prominent. Like you've seen the Merriweather Fur, there's this huge neon line. It's almost like we started with that. Like there's this big line. What is that doing? And how does that affect her abstract painting, and how does that affect how we're thinking about it? And also, when we started talking about this idea of the line in the art in the show, in my client's collection, I talked to her about Daniel Buren, and I sort of also used that as a starting point. Because I, as a, if you want to call it an art historical scholar, thinking about art in the last two centuries, I have to think about Daniel Buren when I think about the line in contemporary art. He's sort of, in my mind, the master.
Oh, just tell us who Daniel Buren is.
Sure. So Daniel Buren is a artist that started making art in the 1960s, became very prominent. He's French. He spends a lot of his time in Paris. That's where he's based. But he's also always sort of moving around. He does a lot of commissions. He's done major, major commissions, things at the Louis Vuitton building. He's done things at most major museums. I've seen him also involved in things like the Munster Sculpture Park, where it's a big collaboration of artists all throughout the world who end up in this one little city every 5 years, and he got to do some sort of major intervention.
What's
and
his medium? Whole thing,
his medium, it's a good question. He uses all mediums. He's also involved with architecture. So his idea is inserting in the architecture with a line. and how does that affect things? And I say the line, I mean, he kind of uses these as ways to do his different projects, but it's always something bigger. That kind of sounds really small to what he does. But like I said, it is the way that he interacts with the architecture and makes you really aware of your environment, what you're thinking about, what you're seeing, but with a line. So mm-hmm. I sort of used him as a starting.
So, well, let's start with the Mary Weatherford then. As you go through okay. the lobby, at the very back wall, there is this painted canvas, which has a kind of wash of red, black, blue, brown. You know, it's an abstract kind of pattern. And then on it are two, it's called purple lights. There are a purple and a pink yes. neon wiggly piece of tube. And then the wires are very prominent, the actual white thick wires bringing the electricity to it and to the little converter box are mm-hmm. all very obvious. You know, there's no hiding them. Well, who's Mary Weatherford
Mary Weatherford is an artist from Los Angeles. I would say we call a mid-career artist. She's in her early 60s. I've known her for a very long time, and I've watched her work develop over the last, let's say, 20 years. And you realize with every artist, especially with painters, there's this evolution that's really exciting to watch. Oftentimes, people always say artists who are dealing with painting usually takes a long time to become their main focus, really getting into their... they're kind of at their master level, so to speak, as a way to say it. And, you know, Mary has been painting a lot of times about nature, cave paintings, things like this, that definitely were thinking about the shapes of nature. And then when she stumbled, she probably wouldn't say that, but I felt like she drove through a town in north of LA. And it was this whole idea of, oh my gosh, there's so many neon signs, and all these neon signs are displaying light all throughout the countryside. So they're putting light onto nature, basically. And I think that's what made her or helped her decide to do something like this, which was very radical. It's also kind of silly to say the word radical, but at the same time, she's an abstract painter. So then to add something very man-made, like a neon tube, in that world, that's a radical step.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to a lot of abstract painters who were looking at her show, and they were very excited. They thought it was major. They thought it was a big development, and it was a risk. I mean, when she first did a show with neon tubing, everybody was talking about it. And again, I know it sounds kind of silly, like, oh, it's just more abstraction. But the line with the tube that was man-made against the nature, it made us all stop and made us all think about, well, what is that doing? And mm-hmm. it definitely divided her painting up. And it definitely, like you said, you could see the wires, you could see the electricity. She wasn't trying to hide what she was doing. And her whole point, I think, was look what we have created in our world. We now have nature with the man-made on top of it, and look what that's doing. I feel like that was another interesting way that the line kind of develops in our world, so to speak.
For a painter, it was a radical break. I mean, sometimes like they cut the canvas, they shred mm-hmm. it, they could stick crockery on it, you know, broken crockery, and paint over it.
Yes.
They're trying to break through the sort of two-dimensional limitation. In her case, you're saying she was known as an abstract painter, and then suddenly sticking electricity.
Exactly. Like, it's something else. It was an object that she put on top of her beautiful abstract paintings. But like I said, it was also that she was so well known as like working with nature and caves. Sometimes she had like actual shells on top of the canvas as like a collage element. So she really was involved with this idea of nature. And I just thought it was an interesting development that she took nature one step further and saw how nature is reacting to what we as humans are doing to the nature. I don't think it was exactly like, oh, this is a climate change situation, but it was more like, let's look at what's really happening in our surroundings.
Mm-hmm. And did kill her career?
It created her career. No, it went so well. Like gangbusters. Now she's working with major galleries. She has a bigger studio. She's showing all over the world. So that to me was also exciting. Like, here's somebody who's been really practicing her craft, really working on her painting, showing it when she can, but just, you know, again, kind of toiling away, enjoying being a painter. And it's nice to see that she took a risk and it really paid off.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped her move in different directions, and it helped her move bigger. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this painting is a nice size, but she's painted much bigger than this, even in this fashion.
There you go, artists. Yeah. Any artists listening, take a radical chance.
Yeah, exactly. Take a walk off the ledge.
So Maya Lin has a piece in this. Everyone knows Maya Lin, around
Yes.
here for her work in the gorge,
I heard about this.
connecting native people and their land masses back to just connecting them back to people so they're accessible. But in this one, she does a map of Mesopotamia. The two rivers, the Tigris and the
Yes.
Euphrates, they're done in metal. So all it is,
Right.
it looks like a wiggly line drawing on the wall. There's no sign, you can't see the screws, just this sort of nickel-colored metal stuck to the white wall. And it looks like a river system. And that's it.
Right.
Some bits of it are slightly batter than others, like there may be a dam or there's a lake where it looks like,
Yes.
also looks like a mold. When people pour liquid metal into a mold and it comes out so really smooth and detailed. And this is just stuck to the wall like a thick gray line drawing.
Right.
What is Maya Lin's, relationship to the Middle East?
Well, it's also the interesting thing that you were talking about was the actual material that it does feel like it's like this thick line that she puts on a wall. But yes, it is sculpture, but it's also very interesting how she came about what she wanted the sculpture to be from the material, the actual material is from what is thrown away when you create silver gelatin photography. And she used that as a way to sculpt the line, basically.
It's not
What?
metal.
It's not, well, it's a type of metal. It turns into a metal basically, but it's from the silver gelatin that you use to make photographs. So she really wanted this whole conceptual connection where this is almost like a snapshot of the river at a certain moment. Because as we all know, with entropy, with change, with erosion, things are changing all the time, and nothing more so than a river. So I kind of like that idea also that it wasn't just let me just sculpt a river and throw it on the wall. Obviously, it has a lot of connections, a lot of connotations, and yes, the connection with the Middle East, sort of this idea of it's definitely you can't talk about the Middle East without thinking about politics, but at the same time, if you just come down to what is it that draws everybody together, it's water sources, and you might be on one side of the river or the other side, but we're all working with this river, basically. And so, again, it's sort of how nature is creating sides, perhaps, or it's creating community. Again, I think there's all different ways you can think about that. And I think that someone like Maya Lin, I mean, she's such a, her kind of way of thinking is, again, it's like what I was saying about Buren, it's architecture, it's art, it's monumental, and it's thinking in these bigger kind of phrases.
Was this piece a one-off, or was it part of a series, or
No.
is it a sketch for a massive sculpture or what?
It's a part of a series. She's actually done a few of these rivers. There's many of these. Not many, I shouldn't say it like that, but there are some in a series, and she's done different types of rivers. So, and I also thought for me, the river, you don't know which way it's flowing. I don't know. It's just things like that I think are interesting that you can't really tell just from seeing an image, like, well, what's really going on? And it was fun. I had a lot of people ask me questions about it at the opening, like, what is it? What is happening? So I thought it was cool because it did incite more conversation. Some people thought it was a map. They didn't know it was a river, just a river, so to speak. So it brought out more conversation.
And there's no name card on the wall, correct?
No, it's no name cards. We have a QR that you use with your phone. And the idea was also to let, and the whole idea about the lobby is just to show great art. So the idea is that you get to really focus on the artwork. And yes, we want you to know what's going on. Obviously, we want you to know about the artist. We put a lot on our website, but the idea is that you get to go further with that, you get to, get the QR code, go to the website, look at the artwork, look at, we put websites of all the artists on there so you can get further more information about everybody. But again, the idea is do not distract you from the actual art in the museum space.
Right, and there is an iPad there if you want to go and
Yes.
check it on
Oh, that's
the
true.
desk. You can.
Yes, there is something on the desk. You don't have to use your phone necessarily.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sima Famaland. She is the curator of Between Two Points, a show on now at the lobby at the Ellen Browning Building at 28th and Division, and the show runs through October the 15th. Jenny Holzer has a piece, and it's next to the Maya Lin. It's a huge canvas. I don't know, like it's 8 by 10 or something, and
Yes.
it's a text where nearly everything has been redacted. There is just horizontal bars of gold leaf
Yes.
covering up where there should be words, and then the background is silver leaf squares. And at the bottom, what does it say? Esquire, deposition, solution.
Yes.
And that's it. So
And
it's
that's it.
at the top, line one, it says it's just the document. And
Right. I
that's
love
it.
it. So yeah, Jenny is another artist who she's just huge in the way that she's shown all over the world. She shows in very different mediums. She does a lot with digital, a lot with digital sculpture installation, but she's also done a series of these redacted paintings. And they're one of my favorites. I think that the way that she's taken her ideas into painting is super interesting and also incredibly smart, and kind of follows the thread of how she thinks about the world, how she thinks about the information that we're receiving. And so, as you were just saying, Joseph, this is something where she's looked at all these redacted documents. And she's like, wait a minute, we're getting a document to give us information and we can't see anything. The line has obliterated all the information. And I also just love that the line here, as opposed to being an abstraction, it's really kind of contextual. It's kind of showing you what you're not seeing. And also she does this in such a beautiful way. It's a beautiful canvas. It's gold leaf, it's silver. There's like a little red underneath. So she also kind of seduces you and think this is so beautiful. And then you realize what's really happening. It's not so beautiful.
So the red that's showing through, is that some kind of abrasion through the gold and silver leaf?
Yeah, I think it's an underpainting. I'm not sure her exact process, but I'm assuming it's an underpainting that she puts the gold and silver leaf on top of.
And the thing at the bottom is like, yeah, Esquire deposition solution. Is that a
Yeah,
legal document company?
I think it's a company, exactly. But I just love how at the top it's like, here's your document, and then you see nothing because of the line obliterating everything.
Are we supposed to think it's some kind of political redaction or general?
Yes, it is. No, there's something political going on for sure. For sure. It's coming from a specific political moment, I would say. I also feel like, yes, that's something interesting, but it's also not everything. I think that it's also just kind of a universal, like, this is what happens in our world now. Like, we're supposed to get documents that explain the political myths of our world, and we're not. They're being redacted, basically.
We also
And
get
this is
too
what that
many
means.
documents.
I think also the idea of the information age that we're in is it's the pro and the con. Sometimes we are so inundated and overwhelmed, we don't get anything. We can't kind of digest everything, and there's too much to digest. I mean, I know I feel it. I can only imagine. I'm assuming everybody does.
And we use robots to do the reading now.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. I mean, I find that, I mean, this is a total segue, but I find that people say two different things. Some people say I can't take in everything, so I only take in what comes my way. And then some people are voracious, so like I have to know everything, and they read as much as they can all day. So I feel like, again, it just depends who you are and what it is that you're wanting for your life.
That is quite a good, interesting dividing line. So the woman who sits at the desk,
Yes.
she,
Beck.
Beck, is an artist, and she gets to sit and stare at the biggest piece all day. It's called
Yes.
Black Arrow, by Leon Polk Smith. And it's three canvases, shaped
Yes.
canvases. It looks like an oval, sort of a squashed oval, and a square with rounded corners. And they're
Right.
pushed together. And then they're sort of pink, red, and another color. And then
Yes.
across them is this black sweeping shape that goes over all the edges. And it's like a puzzle piece. It's like two
Yes.
images in one. And I presume that is the black arrow of the title.
Yes, and kind of the black almost like puts it all together. And that's the other thing about someone like Liam is that he was trying to kind of show you, taking the idea of it doesn't have to be a square painting or a rectangular painting. What else can we do with painting? Again, I would think that every artist of their moment is trying to, we always say, is trying to do something different than the generation before them. And I think we were so inundated with, abstract expressionism, which was big, huge, rectangular, physical canvases, that I think he was trying to sort of show you what else can happen in a canvas. So he really worked very took a while, I should say, for him to come up with this idea of the circle and how to physically produce that to make it a perfect circle and to stretch the canvas on the stretcher. So it was, as you can tell from the works in the show, it's perfect, not easy. There's no kind of wrinkles or anything like that. And so that took a while. Yeah, that took a while for him to develop that. And so once he did, then he could really move forward into this next stage of, okay, now I have all these different shapes. How do I bring all that together? And I feel like that was the beauty of his work, is that he kind of shows you, again, let me give you a line, but I'm going to make the line into a circle. So it kind of goes around itself to come back to the beginning. And that's the circle. And that's kind of my whole shape of this canvas. And so showing you abstraction in a different way, much more physical. I would say that during that time, we did get a lot more. We saw other artists doing these kind of things where they didn't want to work within just a square. But I feel like Leon Polk Smith is one of the best. And I love how he created different shapes that can then come together to form a bigger shape. So you almost get like four paintings. You get the three little ones and then the big one, that the overriding one.
He died age 90 in 1996. So he's like Mr. 20th century man, you know.
Exactly.
I have a dividing line in my head between artists who make art about the world, like Jenny Holzer, and artists who make art about art, which is more academic. It's focused on the problems of the artist making art.
Right.
And I actually value the former group higher than the second.
Interesting. I would say everybody has that divide also, and everybody sits on a different side of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're looking at work for this collection, which do you gravitate towards?
You know, it's going to sound so like, oh, that's a lame answer. I like both, but I say that, but I'll kind of give you more information on why both, because I think I like the ones that can do either very well. Like, I feel like someone like Leon Polk Smith, he did kind of investigate, what does it mean to have a painting? And what does it mean if it's just a rectangle? And what does it mean if I make it into a circle or different shapes or combine different shapes? And I think he was a problem solver, but he also was successful. I think a lot of artists try to solve a problem and you don't get a successful kind of final product. Same thing with Mary Weatherford. And then I think someone like Jenny Holzer was able to show you content in a way that also dovetails with her ideas, her thoughts, her political viewpoint, but she does it in different mediums, but she does every medium so successfully that, again, she's just a great artist. And so I feel like even though you might see artists fall on one side or the other, what I'm looking for is great artists. No matter which side they fall on, I just want great. And we also like, you probably also saw from the last show, The Earth Last, which was more about flowers. The collection is really about beauty, and it's about looking for beautiful moments. Like even in Jenny Holzer, like we just said, it's, you know, it's a tough subject matter, but she also makes it beautiful. She makes a beautiful painting. So you're kind of seduced with the vision of the painting, and then you find out more. But I do think the beauty is kind of what's, maybe that's even more the overarching theme of all the shows, even though I'm trying to show you more of the line in this one. I just think everything in the collection is quite beautiful in its own way.
There's a piece by Carmen Herrera, which is untitled, and it's a rectangle, you know, in the vertical. It's red on either side and a big black stripe down the middle. And that is next to Tondo number 12, which is a big round stained glass piece. And it's kind of, squares and whatever that shape is when you go around, when a square hits a circle, you know.
Right,
it's just
right.
Different colored glass with a few bits of mirror and some clear. And it's in the window, so it's so clean and beautiful. Mm-hmm. You can stare at it for a long time. So I spent more time looking at the Tondo than the Untitled. Are they related? Did you put them next to each other for a reason?
I put them next to each other because I love this idea. Like when people think of the line, they think of a straight line. And so I love this idea that the show gives you different ways that people use lines, especially artists using the line. So we have this gorgeous circle, this Tondo by Daniel Buren. And then we have someone like Carmen Herrera, who was very investigative of the hard edge abstraction, the line that you can see in all of her work. But it's very much about the square, the rectangle, which is the exact opposite of Leon Polk Smith. And it's also very opposite of someone like Daniel Buren. who is more about investigating how the line can work within architecture and environment. So I do feel like, yes, they are not connected, but they bring out interesting conversations because they're very different. And Carmen Herrera has been painting also. I mean, I feel like I keep saying this in the sense that like these artists really work for a long time before things happen. But Carmen has such an amazing story of something just like that. He's been painting since, I would say, I think the 30s. And then her husband was a museum administrator, and she just sort of took the back seat. She painted all the time, but nothing really, she wasn't about being a painter. She was a wife, a mother. And then her husband passed away. And in the 80s, people started asking her about her art. And she started showing, and then people started to really pay attention. So she made her first sale when she was 80 years old. So again, I feel like there's so much focus right now on the young, the cool, the, you know, these people making what we think are radical statements. But here you see somebody making radical statements without kind of being sensational. And she passed away at 106, and she got major museum attention. She got major retrospectives. Everybody wanted the work. She's in the ever museum collection. She just kept doing her thing. And to her, that was radical. And I just love that. And I think, again, I love that the show has all different generations, all different mediums, because I feel like it broadens the conversation. We don't have to think about, oh, who is the 25-year-old that's graduated from art school? Think about people who have been really working at things and really have a lot to say.
And there's a John Mason has a great ceramic piece. It's just very angular. It's not a vessel. You think it was a vase, but when you look in the top, there's no hole. But it almost looks like it could be 3D printed, but it's ceramic and very natural.
Exact opposite. Yes.
Yeah,
he's almost the exact opposite.
It's kind of vorticist, you know, though, these shapes twist going in all directions, but it's also kind of uniform or regular, under control.
And he too was being radical at his time. He was taking basically like a block of clay and showing you how you can create something incredibly beautiful and interesting with just a piece of clay. And that's when he started carving and making these lines. But it started as like a block of a circle. And he also was very instrumental, I would say, at creating this idea of craft is not supposed to be in a different category than fine art. Like, there is no such thing. He doesn't believe in that divide. And so he really kind of took this idea of what we would say is craft and made it into fine art. And so back in that day, like, he's also from the 70s, where he really made this statement. He was showing with artists of his moment that were more painters and things like that. And like I said, he was doing what he thought was radical. And again, it's so, like you said, it's not 3D printed. Like, nowadays we're like, oh, everything is 3D printed, but this is using the hand. And that was a radical gesture back then. Mm-hmm. And putting it next to paintings, a lot of them were abstract expressionists at the time. So he really, made a mark also. But it's, again, very subtle.
And just in the last minute, there is a David Hockney. It looks more like a sketch. It's a diving board. It's sort of very rough. He doesn't go into the luxurious shapes and shadows that he does with paint when he does
digitals,
but this is more like thin, almost colored pencil lines, and it's a small, I don't know what it is, a sketch, but it's a print.
Yes, but you know, it's a Hockney, it's a pool scene, so you know, from the 60s when he made his famous pool series. This is actually later, this is from the 80s. You revisited that idea, and again, the content of that was so important, so major. And I feel like I also liked how he uses the line in a way to give you content. I mean, here the line is used as a way to show you the water, maybe show you the bottom of the pool. And it's just lines. But because he's such a master artist, he knows how to use the line to give you this gorgeous picture. So that was the idea behind that.
And then there's a Tony Lewis piece tucked around the corner.
Yes, I know.
Sorry,
I couldn't have enough space. Sorry, Tony. I ran out of space, but I wanted you to be in this context.
It's sort of a glitter splash.
Black
glitter on a black and white background. It's called Stuff.
Yes. And he's an American artist. I would say he's more one of the younger artists in the show. He's based in Chicago. I feel like a lot of his work is dealing with abstraction, but I feel at the same time, it's an abstraction that has something to say. I can't tell you exactly what it is that he's saying, but it feels very much like the street, like tar, I get a sense of like urbanism with this work, and I feel that whole series has that type of vibe to it. And I feel that he sort of has a lot to say with that, but using sort of abstract mentions, so it doesn't have to be so explicit, so direct. What is it like to, grow up in Chicago in the inner city?
My name's Joseph Gallivant. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Sima Famalant. She is the curator of Between Two Points, a show on now at the lobby at the Ellen Browning Building, 2871 Southeast Division Street, through October 15. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again
Thank
by
you.
Zoom, Sima.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Tú estás escuchando KBOO por la 90.7 FM y en la internet kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 6 de junio del 2023. La emergencia pública mundial causada por el COVID-19 puede haber terminado oficialmente, pero la pandemia seguirá con nosotros por muchos años. Tampoco está claro que los gobiernos hayan aprendido lo suficiente del brote como para estar preparados para luchar contra los nuevos microbios emergentes que podrían desencadenar calamidades peores. Estas son las crudas conclusiones de los científicos de que la Organización Mundial de la Salud ya no considera